Across the Divide, Part 3, page 137. Before we begin, this part of the story is about a new family and how they got on this day in late August. "I have to go, Kitty," said Dad. "I have to. There'll be trouble at this meeting, Billy. I just know it." Liam stood outside the kitchen door. His sisters were skipping at a lamppost around the corner, and Liam had been playing football on the road and had come in for a drink of water. Now, however, he couldn't help but eavesdrop on his parents in the kitchen, who clearly thought they had the house to themselves. "If there is trouble," said his father, "it won't be our making." "What good is that if you get arrested? Please, Billy, I don't ask very often. Skip this meeting?" Liam stood unmoving, listening intently. His mother was right. She rarely asked his dad outright not to do things, even though Liam sensed that she worried a lot about the kind of stands that he took. There was a pause, and when his father answered, it was in an unusually gentle tone. "I'm sorry, love," he said. "I really am, but I can't turn my back on Larkin now. There's a principle at stake."
"And what's the principle this time, Billy?"
"Dublin belongs to the people who live here. If Jim Larkin wants to have a meeting in its main street, he's entitled to. There's a warrant for his arrest. The police won't let him address the crowd."
"That's exactly Larkin's point, Kitty. The day is over when we ask them to let us. We're free men and women. We're exercising the right to free speech."
Liam felt a tingle of excitement run up his spine. Before Larkin's arrival in Dublin, the idea of defying the all-powerful employers and the police would have been unthinkable. Now it seemed like that there was going to be a mass meeting in Sackville Street, whether the authorities liked it or not.
"You could end up getting arrested."
"They can't arrest all of us, not if we turn up in our thousands." Liam thought of them all showing up to see Big Jim Larkin, and a dangerous but tempting idea lodged in his head. This would really be worth seeing. Supposing he pretended to be playing with his friends and slipped into town to see what happened.
"Have we not enough to worry about?" said his mother. "You said yourself you could be locked out next week."
Liam had heard his dad saying that 400 employers were meeting over the coming days, and it was rumoured that they would lock out every worker who was a member of the transport union. If that happened, there would be 20,000 people out of work, and the union's strike pay wouldn't go very far. Not when divided among 20,000 workers. It wasn't as if his dad's family could afford to support him either. His brothers and sisters had children of their own to feed, and many of them were also in danger of being locked out. Liam's mother's family were small farmers in Westmeath, and Liam's granddad Crosby, Ma's father, had never really approved of Da and was unsympathetic to unions and workers' rights. Ma had always got on well with her sister Molly, who was married to a farmer and who might be able to offer some support. But she lived in faraway Balnacargy, and she also had her own children to look after.
"Maybe it won't come to all-out war," said Dad. "Maybe the bosses will see that a lockout will hurt them as well as us. Let's keep our chins up, Kitty, okay?"
There was a pause. Then Liam heard his mother saying, "Right,
resignedly. Not wanting to be caught listening, he gave up on his drink of water and quickly tiptoed back across the front room and out the open hall door. The late August sky was turning golden as the sun started to set, but Liam barely noticed. His mind was on tomorrow and the showdown that was looming between the police and Larkin. He had to be there to see it. He would be in all sorts of trouble if he was caught, but he didn't care. His mind suddenly made up. He closed over the hall door, headed down the road, and returned to his game of football. From Across the Divide by Brian Gallagher.